Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Our city has been on a quest to maintain and increase the supply of affordable housing. One approach has been to go to the voters with referenda that float bonds to bring money into the housing trust fund. Voters have always said yes, but then that money has to be put to use. And in October, the city of Charlotte embarked on a new way to do just that. They announced a partnership with Enterprise Community Partners on an initiative to transform underutilized land from faith-based organizations into affordable housing. City Council at-large member Loana Mayfield was the driving force behind the launch of the city's Faith in Housing initiative, which helps in this effort by providing funding for training, technical assistance, and more. Loana Mayfield is with us for the hour, along with other principal players, to talk about how this new effort works. We're also joined by Rebecca Hefner, Director of Housing and Neighborhood Services for the City of Charlotte. Dr. Christy Cade is Vice President and Southeast Market Leader for Enterprise Community Partners. And James Jackson is the founding chair of the Park Community Development Corporation. That's a nonprofit focused on strengthening families and communities in West Charlotte through affordable housing, healthy living, and economic mobility initiatives. It's an offshoot of the Park Church. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here. Welcome.
Morning.
Morning.
Loana, I want to begin with you. I want you to talk about, we've done many shows on this topic, but it bears repeating because there are a lot of newcomers that move into Charlotte every day. Talk about the need for affordable housing. How great is it?
The need was great years ago, long before Charlotte saw this boom of activity and the average of 100 plus 150, 160, depending on who's doing the number, moving to the region daily. And the cost of living has increased considerably just the last 5 years. So some studies show that we have an average about 32,000 units that we have a deficit on. I think one of the challenges is the fact that we're not also talking about the impact that investors have made, both international and domestic. And one study earlier this year identifying 100,000 single family homes that have been purchased by investors to turn into rentals and or new single family home communities that are being built for the specific purpose of rental. So when we think about Charlotte, the idea of if we build more, then the rates will come down. That's not actually happening here in our region the way it may be in other areas, because so many new people are moving here. Yet we have a lot of individuals that are earning $80,000 or less annually with rents as high as $2,000 a month.
And it should be pointed out that these big companies backed by investors building houses that are being built, single family homes that are being built for rental purposes, not purchase purposes, are both
Correct.
Keeping people out of the home buying market, raising the rates of home values of homes, and also the rental rates. They're not necessarily geared toward affordable or workforce housing. Voters, as I mentioned, Loana, several times now, have said yes to these bonds to support affordable housing in the millions of dollars. They've always said yes. How many affordable housing units have been created or saved? Because part of that money goes to rehabbing units that are already affordable. How many have we added to the stock or saved in the stock of affordable housing because of these bonds? Are we making a dent? Are we keeping place or are we falling behind?
I would say we are definitely making a dent. If you think about just fiscal year 2025, we on the city have provided around $6.7 million in our House Charlotte Assistance Program. That is the down payment assistance program that the city provides. That helped over 150 home buyers. And we've had more than 7,000 families in totality that have been able to purchase homes since creating our House Charlotte program. So a dent is definitely being made. Can we do more? Yes. And this program that we're that we'll be discussing today is definitely a step in the right direction as we continue to create opportunities.
And according to the State of Housing Report, which is produced by UNC Charlotte, less than 20% of homes here were sold at an affordable price last year, 2024. About 75% of households can't, 75% of households cannot afford a median-priced home here in Charlotte, which it would come in at around $443,850. For which a family would need to make $146,000 or more dollars. That's a lot of money, and many people do not make that kind of money. The director of the Childress Klein Center, the lead researcher on that report, says, quote, "We need some kind of policy solution to this. We need subsidized housing." The bonds that we've passed, Luana, and the initiative that you folks started in October, which we'll talk about, are not necessarily a policy solution, nor are they nor are you creating subsidized housing with this, I would think. Is the city looking into those other things as possible solutions in addition to what we're going to talk about this morning?
Well, what I want to remind everyone is, unlike some communities, we are still under Dillon Law in the state of North Carolina. So even though we might like the idea of identifying, let's say, rent control, we don't have the legal ability to do that. So through the trust fund dollars, let's look at our down payment assistance. An individual has the ability of identifying, honestly, up to about $80,000 to go towards down payment assistance when they use funding that's available through the city as well as other banking institutions. DreamKey is one of our biggest partners with training. So when we look at house prices, let's say in 2022, if you earned $75,000, you were able to buy a home. You may have had a small selection because of investors coming into the community, yet you were able. Now that's $30,000 to $40,000 more that you need. So we are being very intentional on how we've allocated that $100 million. We set aside $25 million just for home ownership. We set aside $5 million for innovative and creative housing development. We, myself, Councilmember Driggs, and Dr. Watlington worked together last summer and really dug into how can we allocate this $100 million to have the greatest impact. Recognizing policy-wise, where we get to step in is our language supportive for religious institutions to create a development, whether it's single family or multifamily housing that's specifically for our workforce.
So policy-wise,
we're creating language to try to offset some of the challenges that come along with development. And those challenges are increased prices.
So you've just alluded to what we're going to spend the rest of the hour talking about, the city's Faith in Housing Initiative. That's something that you lead at the council level. So explain to people who have never heard of it what it is and how you see it working.
Thank you for that question. So the mayor identified back in 2023 a conversation that was actually led by outside partners regarding things that were being identified across the nation. How does local government work to help address this housing issue and concern? She identified and asked for me to lead this. We identified it as the Faith in Housing Initiative, where we had the opportunity to work directly with religious institutions side by side. So we kicked it off with a summit. At that summit, we had over 300 attendees, but what I'm most proud of is we had more than 90 different religious institutions and houses of faith that came together at the convention center. And up to that point, it had been unheard of to have that many diverse religious institutions come together. Let's talk about this church-owned land, because unfortunately, people aren't attending churches at the levels that they once did. So you have this asset and you may have wanted to get into housing. And we had some institutions, religious institutions, that were on that front end and said, we want to help with this issue. Here's where the city gets to come in side by side, listening to some of the challenges that religious institutions have run into regarding our policy, understanding that different religious institutions have a different setup. Some may have a board of directors within the church. Some may be like the Catholic religion. You need to run any changes or decisions up through the diocese. What is your form of governance for your institution? If you have land, what are you considering doing with this land? How can the city help you? And let's say you don't have land, but you have this beautiful large church that may be underutilized. How can we connect you with the right partners to reimagine that space? Think of Do Greater and the work that they partnered with Shiloh Institutional Baptist Church, which is off of Greenland and Berry Hill over near Wilkerson Boulevard, between Wilkerson and Freedom. They went in, totally redesigned the basement of the church and created a school that's created small businesses as well as training for our youth and for young people. How can we reimagine space that the community's already utilizing beyond the feeding program the church may have? A daycare center, a school, an adult care center, because our child care workers earn $14 to $16 an hour. They also need child care. What if we partner with that religious institution to help offset the cost and to train you on how to have the right conversation with developers so that that church doesn't give away their land and not see the benefits from it?
Back in March, when this was an idea that was just being discussed, you spoke with WCNC TV and said that I have people every week saying, my church has land. How do we get engaged? How do we get involved? And you add that though it'll be a while, 18 months to 3 years, for a development to result, we are making strides. We will talk about that, but I also want to talk about where this idea for cities to partner with faith-based organizations to solve a problem that the city has, where did it originate? Where did it come from? It just didn't spring to life in Charlotte.
It did not spring to life in Charlotte, and I wish I could take credit, and I wish the city could take credit, but we cannot. All we have done is looked around. So, as you might know, Mike, for the city of Charlotte, we're also connected with the National League of Cities. So, we attend workshops and trainings basically to learn how to be more effective governing body and a governing board. For me, it was at one of those National League of City meetings, specifically with the organization National Black Caucus of Local Elected Officials, where I was speaking with another elected official that was talking about doing this work. And I mentioned that, we've had churches in Charlotte years ago that have stepped into this. I wonder what it would look like if government played a more proactive role in opposed to the church going through the regular rezoning process and paying those fees and trying to maneuver, identifying an attorney and all of that. The mayor had a conversation with the Re Charlotte Realtors because they hosted their conference here in Charlotte a couple of years ago. And there was something that was happening in Dallas, Texas. It was something that was happening in Chicago and some other areas. So what we looked at is how do we take this best practice and create a way for it to fit into Charlotte and our needs, but not getting ahead of the religious community
City
to work
Council's
side by side to find out what are your concerns and how can we help you?
City Council's Luana Mayfield, who's on council at large, serves as the lead in the city's faith and housing initiative. When we come back, she's given us the primer on the need and how this is going to work and why they came up with it. And when we come back, we'll talk to the other members of our panel about all of this. They bring to the table various different other aspects of expertise, and we'll find out more about how this works, how it's going to work, and why. We're doing it because there's a why behind all of this. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and Habitat Charlotte Region. Since 1983, Habitat Charlotte Region has partnered with more than 5,000 families through financial education, homeownership, and critical home repair. More information at habitatcltregion.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Charlotte's relatively new faith in housing initiative, an attempt to bring more affordable housing online using property and the help of various faith-based communities around Charlotte. The leader of that initiative for the city council is Luana Mayfield. She is here along with Rebecca Hefner, director of the Housing and Neighborhood Department, if I got that right, for the city of Charlotte, and Dr. Christy Cade, vice president and Southeast Market Leader for Enterprise Community Partners. They do this across the country, and we'll talk about that. And James Jackson, the founding chair of the Park Community Development Organization, which is a part of the Park Church. Rebecca, this Faith in Housing Initiative and the partnership between community partners, enterprise community partners, and I think it's 12 faith-based organizations, including Park Community Development, was announced in October, along with the city's plan to provide about $430,000 in funding for this. Is the city responsible for putting all of this together, or were there other players responsible for doing this?
This is a very collaborative partnership. I think you heard from Councilmember Mayfield's comments that the city is really dedicated to walking alongside our faith partners in this effort. And so through the work that we have done over the last year, we have brought together a whole wide range of partners. The educational and development cohort is being led by Enterprise. The city put out a request for proposals, you know, city speak for finding the right organization to support us in this effort, and ultimately Enterprise was selected. And then we actually had almost 20 applicants to the cohort and ended up selecting 12 to participate. But along the way, we've had support from a number of our nonprofit partners and organization in Charlotte called Give Impact for Charlotte. A lot of the faith-based partners who've already done this work as well.
What was I've heard several numbers being thrown around. I think you just said 20 some faith-based organizations threw their hat into the ring, and you've chosen 12. And I heard, I think, Luana say that 90 communities of faith expressed an interest in all of this. I'm curious what criteria you used to choose the 12 that will launch this project, Rebecca.
Some of the criteria was based on is the faith organization ready to undertake this really complex and long process? Are they casting a vision for either affordable housing or combining that with services that community needs? And then, do they have the land ownership and the site control? So it's really about readiness. There's a long process, and I'm sure James will share, there's a long process of discernment that takes place with faith-based organizations about how to use their properties. And we wanted to work alongside faith-based partners who could, in this 18-ish month time frame, come to some development plans that might be able to come to fruition.
Dr. Christy Cade is here. She is the vice president and Southeast Market Leader for this Enterprise Community Partners Organization, which has been alluded to many times so far in this conversation. They're a national nonprofit that works to expand affordable housing, among other things. That means, Christy, that you've done this in other cities for a while, among other things that you have been involved in. How many other cities are doing exactly this?
The Enterprise Faith-Based Development Initiative started actually 20 years ago. And so we have cities from New York to Miami, Atlanta to Cleveland, in Texas, also in California, we have faith-based development initiatives going on and more starting every year. So we have quite a few communities across the country that have initiated the faith-based development initiative.
I would imagine that since you've been doing this, and this has been going around the country for two decades, that it is successful. Otherwise, you wouldn't still be doing it. How successful would you say it has been, and why?
Well, one of the things for success is this program, at its core, is not about the development in the forefront. I think that Councilmember Mayfield and Rebecca also alluded to the fact that this is an opportunity to bring tools and resources to congregations who are discerning whether or not development on property that they own or with assets they own is something that is viable, that aligns with their mission and makes them a responsible continued anchor in their community. So success number one is whether or not the congregation or the house of worship or the faith entity has come together. And so we really want to put the commitment and the time together to learn about the process. We need to emphasize that this is a long process. It has many different avenues through which you have to travel to even bring a property to a project to fruition. There's financing, there's partners, there's professionals that are involved. And so learning the process is the first step. So we feel that that's very successful if churches have completed the process of learning and discerning if they should go forward. That's our first step of success. The second step of success is really assessing what they have at hand and creating a vision for how they're going to meet the needs, stay in alignment with their mission, and then bring forth a project that really is of service to the residents that are existing in the community, to their partners, and also to those who may be coming into community. And that may be whether or not a church wants to provide a daycare center, as Councilmember Mayfield had indicated, or whether or not we're bringing forth affordable housing because the neighborhood has transitioned to senior housing. So the next step is really to do that assessment of what the needs are and to do some assessment of the land that they actually own. So that's the next step of success, to really determine if this is something that's feasible. And then finally, the success is bringing that to fruition with the development.
I'm assuming, Rebecca, that among the 12 organizations that you're doing this initial effort with, all of that has happened. At least the assessment has happened in terms of what the church can bring to the table and what that land will be used for. But you have identified over 88 acres of unused property collectively amongst these 12 different faith-based organizations that could be used for affordable housing. How many units might that accommodate? How much of a dent could this put in our need for affordable housing?
So I don't know that we have an exact number of units. It will all depend on the type of housing that's brought forth, if it's home ownership or multifamily. I think what we think about, especially when we partner with faith-based organizations, because they are, it's not a city need. This is a community need. We're working together to fill that need, and it's really thinking about how will we be able to support families and residents in residential stability, and then even economic mobility going forward? Because we may get at the hundreds of units, but multiple families may cycle through those units over time. So it's about how we're supporting community and place.
James Jackson is with us. He's the founding chair of the Park Community Development Corporation. They're an offshoot of the Park Church. You're kind of an early adopter of this. You were early to the table, well in advance of this particular effort. And you're not alone. There have been other churches that have been doing this as well in the Charlotte region. At what point did your church, the Park, decide that this needed to be part of your mission?
Thanks for that. I was fortunate to retire from banking a few years ago. And I told my pastor Claude Alexander, and he said, I have an opportunity for you post retirement. And that's how I got to be founding chair of the CDC, because we wanted to create a vehicle that would allow us to follow up on a promise that Bishop Alexander made when they acquired the land on Bates Ford a long time ago. And so it was my opportunity to help our church and my pastor realize a dream, essentially. And so it was my honor to sit in that chair. So we formed a community development corporation that's focused on housing and healthy living and economic development. And in our housing phase, and this was right before COVID, we decided to go forward and build a senior living facility first. And because we knew there was an aging population, there are a lot of members who were getting older, although it wasn't for the church specifically, but for anyone could apply and be a part of it. But we wanted to make sure that some members of our congregation also had the benefit. So Bishop Alexander's vision, my retirement to step into something that I'm passionate about, given quite frankly, I grew up in public housing and never lived in a, you know, in a home, quite frankly. And so it too, again, was an opportunity for me to make a difference in the lives of people, you know, like me, for all practical purposes.
So what I'm hearing is, because of your expertise in banking and the fact that you were kind of hornswoggled into doing this for the, for the church, you brought your expertise and they were on the kind of the cutting edge of this happening in Charlotte. There are a couple of projects that the park has been involved in, which I want to talk about. But tell me about how this initiative might help other churches that don't have you spearheading the effort, somebody with your expertise. What does this initiative do for them?
Oh, wow. The void that you have in understanding how it all works and all the moving components and how do you go from A to B to C, it's confusing. And so to have an organization that's providing, you know, essentially a baseline of understanding and resources and a place to go to figure out how to go from A to B to C is, you know, is quite frankly a blessing. And so I'm so proud of Luana and the team for what they are doing to make sure that ABCs are as clear as they can be. Because if you don't understand all of the moving variables, and as we've said, there are lots of them, you know, then you're going to stumble, you're going to get frustrated, et cetera. So to some extent, having a security blanket and resources and the ability to go forward without getting frustrated or thinking you can't figure out whatever obstacle is in front of you gets eliminated, you know, when we have a leader like Luana and an organization like we do with the Faith-Based group.
Christy, since your organization, Enterprise Community Partners, has done this for years and they do it all over the country, I would think that you know how to smooth out the rough edges. And there's a lot at stake here. If a church really wants to make a difference and they want to contribute some land to build senior living housing or affordable housing or whatever it may be, you can't afford to make too many mistakes. Are you there to do that, to smooth off the rough edges? You know where the problems are going to be, and you can circumvent those problems before they happen. Is that essentially what you serve as?
Absolutely. The Faith-Based Development Initiative, at its core, is just that. It provides several months of training that we take the churches through to actually walk them through everything from zoning, working with a local jurisdiction on planning, how to assess a development partner that can help bring the property together. What is a market study and how does that feed into their development project? How can they assess the land for how much they can develop on the 88 acres that we talked about? How can they convert their building and utilize it? Should they demolish it or not? And so through the course of the training, they're learning every step of the process for the development process and those partners that they will engage in. We bring in detailed training. We give them assignments to go back and assess and meet with their congregants and their community about what they want to bring forward so that at the end of the training, they have a vision and they have some tools in hand to move forward with advancing pre-development. There's cost associated with bringing this together. So there's some pre-development work that they need to do. And our faith-based development partnership with them walks hand in hand through that process.
So the park, James, the Park Church is responsible for Gilfield Park, which you completed in 2023. It offered 80 affordable housing units at the time to seniors 55 plus, earning less than 80% of the region's average median income, or about $71,800 for a family of two. What did that, you're kind of on the cutting edge here. This is before all this initiative started, before the help of the Enterprise Community Partners. What did you learn through the realization of that project?
Don't try to build during a time where we're have massive issues going on. With it was a very interesting time because we had the virus and all things like that that was delaying us in being able to go from A to B to C. So we had to do a lot of workarounds and pauses and but we never gave up. We found great partners to work with that were really, really flexible for us. We were able to isolate a portion of our land. So just thinking about how to eat an elephant one, bite at a time. We took a 5-acre piece of it and decided that we would build there and would build, one thing and then evaluate how we go to the next thing. So even though there were many obstacles that were, out there that could delay us but not defer us from being able to complete, it just took longer and it had more trade-offs. But at the end of the day, quite frankly, Bishop Alexander made a promise. We had an opportunity to move forward on that promise. We had partners that were in it with us and were able to work through it, especially the city. During that time as well.
So again, I have about a minute left in this segment, and the park has now filed a rezoning petition. They did it in June to transform 30 acres behind their sanctuary on Bates Ford Road into more than 300 affordable residential units. And I believe that I got a little confused yesterday when I was studying all this, but you're partnering with Enterprise Community Partners in this effort. Given your previous experience, why does that partnership make sense for you?
Well, we're partnering there. We're also partnering with True Homes, who's our developer, and we're also partnering with Prosperity Alliance, which is a minority-owned company, their developer as well. So yes, we're poised to move forward with building out phase two of what we called as phase one earlier with the 80 unit. So,
James Jackson is its founding chair of the Park Community Development Corporation. We'll come back with more conversation with him and others. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the city's relatively new Faith in Housing initiative, which is led on city council by at-large member Luana Mayfield. She joins us along with Rebecca Hefner, director of housing and neighborhoods for the city of Charlotte. Dr. Christy Cade is the vice president and southeast market leader for Enterprise Community Partners. They're involved in all of this as a guiding hand. And James Jackson is the founding chair of the Park Community Development Corporation, offshoot of the Park Church, which has been involved in donating land and developing it for affordable housing at various different levels for a while now. Luana Mayfield, as these projects are developed for these 12 churches that have come forward and been selected for this next phase, this first phase of the Community Faith and Housing Initiative, who decides what sort of development goes on those pieces of property?
Actually, I think Dr. Kate touched on that a bit regarding the multiple partners that are coming together to help identify what could go on this land. What are the opportunities if that institution actually owns the land? Because every project is not going to work for every area. Some areas it's going to be much more beneficial to have for sale product. Some is going to be more beneficial to have for rent product that has a long-term rental ability. So it is through the training, the partnership with Exodus Foundation, as well as NEO Partners, they're the ones that are now leading the digging into the details to see what's the best project for this area. And they're doing that in direct partnership with Warren Wooten, Jessica, Rebecca, our housing and neighborhood staff, to make sure that what we're creating is something that will be a long-term benefit for our community.
Rebecca, this city is growing and changing, and as the result of developers coming in and trying to take up, densify certain areas of town, the character of those neighborhoods is changing, and there has been some pushback in some of those neighborhoods about what's happening to the surrounding area. It's one thing to have a church with a nice big green lawn and maybe some parking spaces and a playground in the back and some extra area for picnics and things like that. It's another thing to have that land suddenly become multi-story affordable housing units. Are you anticipating, have you received any pushback from development like this?
We anticipate that not everyone will be comfortable with change when any development comes. And that is true for all our housing development, whether it's affordable, not affordable, led by faith partners or not. What we've seen with our faith-based partners is because they have already a long-term commitment to the community, and because they have already a power of partnership and convening, that they're getting ahead of that pushback by involving the community in conversations very early and by demonstrating their commitment to the mission and not just to the development. So we haven't had as much concern about the faith-based partnerships as we might about a standard market rate 350-unit apartment building.
Christy, has that been your experience around the country, that these churches, these faith-based organizations, already have a relationship with members of the communities in which they plan to build these units, and therefore the stumbling blocks are fewer?
That is what we see in the 14 communities we serve, over 150 churches we've been working with, and particularly when we review the applications for Charlotte, these churches are anchors in their community. They've already started the work. They're already hosting meetings with the residents in the community. A part of our training and our program is actually to help them hold a charrette, where they bring in the residents and partners, business partners and others in the neighborhood, to really help identify and design what will happen on the acreage that they have. It also dispels the image that it's going to be a tall building. It may be single family homes. It may be a revision of the actual asset that they have as a church building with the development happening inside the church. So the imagery is necessary to get buy-in from the community and also help the community be a part of it. So that is incorporated in the training that we provide in guiding the churches to bring that forward.
So a lot of the land, Luana, that these churches sit on is zoned for one thing, but if you want to put senior living or affordable housing of any type or something else on that property, that requires, it seems to me, zoning changes. And we also have this thing in Charlotte called the UDO, the Unified Development Ordinance, which paints a pretty strict picture of what you can and cannot do and when you can and cannot do it. Is the fact that the city is leading this initiative going to help help get these churches over some of those hurdles?
Yes and yes. So when we think about the UDO, it is a living document. It was not to be a one and done. We had more than 30 years where we had not done a updated plan to anticipate the growth in the city. Through the Faith and Housing Initiative and by working side by side along with our religious institutions and along with Enterprise as well as NEO Group, we are learning what are some of those obstacles. So as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, what is the policy language that we on the city side need to look at in order to help address this very important need, which is one of our top priorities for the city council, as well as the mayor and the city manager? How do we make sure workers can afford to live in Charlotte?
James, your church was involved in this before this effort began. You were involved in this effort as well. What zoning hurdles or other kinds of technical things did you run into that perhaps this will help prevent as this initiative goes forward?
Well, I mean, we really didn't have any zoning issues. And quite frankly, on what we're about to do, we just had our zoning meeting this week, you know, which went very smoothly. So we just prepared. We know the process. We know how to cross the T's and dot the I's. And I think with that knowledge, with the education of what to expect and addressing those on the front end, would result in a smooth zoning this discussion / meeting.
Rebecca, as part of the
good experience.
Rebecca, as part of this effort, the city is putting up $430,321. I'm assuming that's coming from the Housing Trust Fund. Is that correct?
It is not coming from the Housing Trust Fund.
Okay,
actually, it's very hard not to make sure that didn't happen.
Councilmember Mayfield has actually, in partnership with the city manager and council, secured over $2 million to go towards this effort altogether. The $430,000 is for this particular educational cohort. And
so is that money coming is that money coming from the general fund, the general tax fund?
It's coming from our PAYGO fund. Okay. So
and some
money,
ARPA dollars.
And some ARPA dollars. And so the idea being that we can use other general funds from the city to support this initiative, as well as Councilmember Mayfield is out attracting philanthropists and other supporters of this effort. But that the idea being that we can use the Housing Trust Fund in later stages when development proposals are brought forward.
What are ARPA dollars?
So the city received federal funding after the pandemic in multiple buckets, all kinds of acronyms, CARES, ERA, and ARPA. And so they were funds that the city received from the federal government, and city council used those funds for a multitude of community needs, including housing and this initiative.
So I've read that this money, this $430,000, will be used to train organizations on the development process and provide technical assistance, help connect the faith community's efforts to industry professionals who know how to build things and develop projects, etc. I've also read that it's going to be used for what was already alluded to in this conversation, that is pre-development work like making feasibility studies, and that it is unclear whether the program will receive additional funding from the city down the road. This could be it, but maybe not. So if you have an organization like Enterprise Community Partners, Christie's organization, and they do this all over the country, and the Park Church has done it itself here in Charlotte on at least one project, and other churches have as well, why do you need $430,000 worth of help? I'm not sure who to ask that question of.
Well, so, Parker, I'll kick it off right after Dr. K. Dr. K?
It's the investment in the training that's necessary. Although the park has started a development, we have a team from the park that is really walking through and learning the process as well. Every project is a different project. You do learn from the prior project, but you begin again at ground zero for the next project. So how do we help train and equip and bring in the technical assistance that's necessary? The second piece of that is it also is aligning, as it was alluded to, professionals and experts, and how do you access that partnership with the professionals and experts? How do you prepare your own request for proposals? How do you actually walk through that step? So it's an investment in that. And then it's one-on-one technical assistance directly to the churches. Every church is different. As Councilwoman Mayfield alluded to in the beginning, every process is different. And so really being able to help them maneuver through their own process of discernment, decision-making, and learning to get them to the project that is necessary.
So Dr. Kate, I'm presuming that at least part of this, if not all of this $430,000 is going to your organization to provide that technical expertise, because that is your area of expertise. And even though you're a nonprofit, you have to pay salaries. You have to, you have experts that you consult and studies that you conduct that all cost money. Would that be accurate?
That is correct.
So this initiative is meant to help faith organizations find a list of developers, if I understand this correctly, and financial institutions ready to assist them in bringing more affordable housing to the market. You're creating a toolkit, Luana, to that end. Has that happened? What's in the toolkit?
And that one I'm going to lobby back to Dr. Cade and okay. to Rebecca, mainly because that is why we partnered with Exit with Enterprise as well as the NEO Group to create that toolkit. And I do want to just respect the original question when we first started this. Back in 2016, St. Paul Baptist Church partnered with Laurel Street. That was our first religious institution that stepped into the conversation of housing affordability and creating townhomes for sale as well as for rent, specifically for elders. So it's not a new conversation in Charlotte. It's really, how does Charlotte on the front end help you move this conversation forward? Dr. Kay?
So I'm really close, really short. I want to warn you. Hold on. I want to warn you. I'm really short on time. So keep your answers short. Go ahead, Dr. Kay. Okay.
And to bring more churches to the table, as Councilwoman alluded to, there were 90 churches that have been a part of this. 12 are now in the cohort. The process to bringing a project to development takes 24, 36, sometimes 48 months to maneuver through all the process. This partnership includes a pilot on the policies around zoning for each of the 12. There's resources to connect them with professionals, training, technical assistance, and we're gonna help walk them through that process as they look at these individual projects on all 12 parcels of land that they're looking to develop on.
From your experience, Dr. Cade, is turning to faith-based communities, is it a Band-Aid? Is it a logical step in the process of finding places and ways to provide more affordable housing in communities like ours that desperately need it? Are there other avenues that we should be exploring?
Aligning with the faith-based organizations, again, their anchors already in communities. And it really helps us look at housing as not just something we're manufacturing, but as a moral support to our residents, our neighbors, our friends that are in the community already. And so how can we take the assets that we already have to solve those problems, meet the need, and continue to service the community? There are other things that we need to do to increase the availability and access of housing for our seniors, our veterans, for persons with disability and special needs. And so together, these churches, along with the city and other programs, are actually making that happen and looking for those avenues to create more housing, turning public land into usable, affordable housing and community services, adaptive reuse of existing properties that are no longer being used for their original intention. And so collectively, all of these go together to create a very vibrant and thriving community when we take what we already have and transform it into something that meets the needs and serves those that we so hope to maintain and draw into our community.
Luana.
I just want to quickly add, churches, schools, cemeteries are our largest landholders. We're not legally able to access CMS land without having to pay market rate for it. This is a beginning. This is not the end of the conversation, but we are starting with our religious institutions because they have been willing and ready for years and just did not necessarily know how to get started. But it does not end with this.
So I have 30 seconds left. James Jackson, since the park has done this before and you're involved in this project as well, and there are other churches who may be hearing this conversation who might be interested or on the fence, what would you say has been the most gratifying aspect of having participated in this already?
Oh, wow. Well, you know, as I mentioned, I'm a project boy, and so I never had a house, and this gives me an opportunity to share knowledge and create dreams realized for a number of people without a lot of wealth and equity.
James Jackson is founding chair of the Park CDC. Dr. Christy Cade is vice president, Southeast Market Leader for Enterprise Community Partners. Rebecca Hefner is the director of Housing and Neighborhoods for the City of Charlotte. And Luana Mayfield, city council at large, leads the city's Faith in Housing initiative. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.